Hi everyone, Dan Cassidy here. Welcome back to Viewpoints on the UBS Market Moves podcast channel, a new weekly conversation with my colleague Burkhard Varnholt, where we update you on developments throughout global markets and the global macro landscape. Burkhard, thank you once again for spending some time with our listeners, our clients on this Friday as we begin to close out the trading week. Welcome back and nice to be with you today.
Thank you, Dan. It's a pleasure to be here.
Now, Burkhard, our listeners might recall that we launched the Viewpoints podcast series a couple of weeks ago prior to the Easter holiday, and since then, much has developed across global markets. We're, of course, mindful of valuations or all-time high levels across many markets. Now, I understand you have recently conveyed that investors shouldn't feel discouraged to put fresh money to work in the markets at the moment, despite these ubiquitous all-time highs. So, Burkhard, can you begin by summarizing your key arguments for our audience?
Well, of course. I think, look, there are both principles as well as specific forward-looking reasons. The principle is this. Markets, if you look at it, are actually in the business of setting new all-time highs all the time. I mean, that's what markets do. Markets aren't but a reflection or a mirror of global earnings and their growth over time. And because that grows over time, you face all-time highs all the time. So there is no reason to be afraid that today's all-time high will be the last in history. Rest assured, more will come. Let me just give you a few interesting statistics to build this argument up. In fact, since 1950, the broad U.S. equity market has had a total of 1,250 all-time highs. Yes, you heard correctly. That was 1,250 all-time highs in the broad U.S. equity market since 1950. That is an average of all-time highs of 16 times every year. Of course, not every year is equal. And to be fair, the 1970s saw very few all-time highs, while the last decade, starting in 2010 all the way to 2020, counted something like 242 all-time highs. Now, for those who fear, and it's understandable that there's a psychological concern about all-time highs being peak of market, that they were peak of market, if you then dig into the facts and look at how would an investor who had always picked the all-time high and had invested for the next 1 year, 3 year, 5 year, fared compared to somebody else who would have been in the market all the time. Bottom line is, the difference is almost negligible. It's about less than 1%. The other bottom line, or the other way of putting this, is time in the market always beats timing the market. And last but not least, just to dive deeper on the concern that an all-time high could be a bad omen for putting fresh money into the market, one could also ask, so how many severe corrections actually happened after all those 1,250 all-time highs that we have witnessed since 1950? And the answer is surprisingly few. On a one-year horizon, historically, only in 9% of those subsequent years, the market finished 10% lower or more. If you move your investment horizon out from 1 to 3 years, that percentage actually shrinks to only 2%. And good enough, after 5 years, there was not a single observation of markets not being higher after 5 years than at the last all-time high. So, look, markets have no universal rules. Time in the market usually beats timing the market. And while I don't know whether tomorrow, both here and in markets, the sun will shine or rain will fall, if you're invested for the long term, that is the best way to achieve your financial objectives. Because one thing I can say with deep confidence, and that's that over the medium to long term, investors usually earn the risk-free rate of return plus the risk premium available in markets at the time of entry. And that good enough is still substantially positive for bonds and stocks right here, right now.
Now, building from that, Burkhard, you also made some interesting comments recently on where we stand with respect to markets and why markets should continue to reward both bond and equity investors. Can you expand on that for us?
Sure. While a few people were concerned this week about a hotter than expected CPI, it's good to note that yesterday's PPI turned out to be much warmer, much more beneficial. But most importantly, let me get this one clear. You know, I said in the beginning, markets are but a reflection of earnings as well as interest rates and forward-looking expectations. That's it. Earnings are driven by the economy. And no beating around the bush. The U.S. economy is the greatest economy in the world. The U.S. economy is the world's strongest economy. It is powered by consumers who are doing what they're best at. They shop till they drop. And that's because jobs are plenty. Retirement savings, don't forget the baby boomers generation retiring, looks at an all-time high in its private household net worth, in its retirement savings. There is simply no reason for baby boomers to tighten their belts when their savings are at an all-time high. And those who earn a salary have been and will continue to get higher hourly salaries because jobs are plenty and there's a shortage of labor wherever we look. Gladly, this is not creating a 1970s stagflation scenario because the key difference between today and then is broad-based productivity gains. We've been seeing broad-based productivity gains by the Bureau of Labor Statistics in the United States for really since the lockdown started, because the lockdown forced the whole world to digitalize overnight. And AI wouldn't be today where it is if the lockdowns hadn't happened and forced everyone to digitalize as if there was no tomorrow. So productivity is making a broad-based comeback, and that is reflected in the paradoxical reality that despite rising salaries and inflation, which is still a hassle, profit margins haven't dented. To the contrary, corporate cash flows and profit margins last year were at a record high. And that is supporting a factory boom, an infrastructure boom like we haven't seen for long. And at the same time, we're getting structural growth, which is driven by plenty of fiscal stimulus caused by a new world order rising. And the new world order rising, I would argue, stands on three important and powerful pillars. The first one is a new global security order is rising. Nowadays, every country in the world wants to spend at least 2% of GDP on defense, on the defense industry. The factories to provide all those goods haven't been built yet. They'll be built in the next few years. They'll hire staff who will be missing elsewhere, strengthening the labor market and hourly salaries. At the same time, the energy crisis, which was caused by Putin's invasion in Ukraine, has forced especially Europe to redirect its energy hunger and the whole world to speed up the energy transitioning to lightning speed. This is being stimulated by fiscal stimulus, by subsidies. And the third pillar to this new world order, and I call it a new world order because it truly is, and because it truly creates structural over cyclical growth, is a new geography of globalization. China got itself guilty by association. And as companies are trying to reshore, not only the United States is seeing a reindustrialization, a reshoring and a factory boom, but also other countries, we're seeing this happen in Europe, and we're seeing third parties benefiting from this, just like Mexico is benefiting from the United States factory boom. The same thing is happening in Europe, where Poland, which has equal unemployment rates and salaries as Mexicans offer companies who invest there, is seeing the same boom. And once again, you're seeing it in markets. The bond and stock markets of these countries are benefiting. So look, the world's on fire in a proverbial sense. And, you know, just for the avoidance of doubt, we're trying to take advantage of this by being overweight in quality bonds in our house view and being benchmark weight in global equities. And I think that's what investors should do. Be invested at all times, but globally diversified to achieve your financial objectives in this environment.
That's right, Burkhardt. As you pointed out, buy quality does remain one of our key messages in focus here at the UBS Chief Investment Office. So looking across asset classes, I do want to shift a bit and acknowledge the recent rally in gold, though also crude prices. So I'm curious, from your vantage point, what should investors make of these developments?
I would say not too much, Dan. I would say this is very significant, but it doesn't fundamentally alter our outlook. It's happening for good and bad reasons at the same time. The good reason is growth, especially marginally better growth across Asia, is driving both oil and gold prices higher. The bad reason is it's the fire in the Middle East, which has been driving the rally in oil prices. And let's just hope and pray that this comes to a more peaceful conclusion. It is our house view that this impact, which is driven really by the market's question, could Iran be part of this conflict or to what extent? Our base case scenario is that this will hopefully prove transitory and pass. But it's a moment of great human and societal tragedy and suffering. But it is not it is not derailing the global growth trajectory, and it is not fundamentally altering our view that you should be invested at all times. I think the last couple of weeks have once again vindicated that point. But also, it also vindicates our point about diversification. Good enough, our house view, our mandates pick up the rally in gold and oil. And, you know, frankly, who else did? So that's to being invested alongside the UBS house view with all the diversification it includes.
Now, Burkhardt, on the lighter side, as we do head into the weekend, when we last spoke on our first podcast, you did mention during our previous conversation how you like to share movie as well as book tips. And I do understand you recently viewed the film Bob Marley, One Love. So I'm curious now, was that just a walk down memory lane, or did you have a specific takeaway to share with our listeners?
I absolutely loved it. And you know, full disclosure, it was both. It was a walk down memory lane as a student. I lived on Jamaica Road, and I played football in Jamaica Park, which is in South London. And especially, and the movie coincidentally focuses on Bob Marley's 2 years in exile, when in 1978, he, for reasons of civil unrest in Jamaica and an attempted assassination on him, had to flee Jamaica, move to London. And those turned out to be his most prolific years as an artist, as an underrated artist, I would argue. I love him, as you can see. Whether you like the story or not, some critics were arguing that it hasn't got enough depth to it. What shall I say? It just makes me want to stand up, get up, and join the music. There's plenty of it, more than 100 music. I love it. Oh, and by the way, one point I found heartwarming. A journalist in the movie, it was actually an original vintage tape, asked Bob Marley, "So you must be very rich now, aren't you?" That was after he had published his most successful album called Exodus, which was a gold album. And so Bob Marley looked at the journalist, and then he laughed, as he always did. He had this disarming laughter or smile. And he said, if you mean rich in terms of bank accounts, no, that's not what I'm after. But I feel like I'm the richest man on earth because I'm rich in immaterial values that are what I believe in and are what drives me. And, you know, that warmed my heart, and it made me think, isn't that what we also discuss with our clients? As the leading global wealth manager, don't we also sometimes speak to clients and ask them, or they ask us, so what is wealth? Is it the bank account? Is it the family and the friends? Health and values? All good food for thought. And for whatever reason, if you find time and interest, I highly recommend taking the 2 hours out of your weekend and enjoying it. for the fun of it.
Burkhard, thank you again for spending some time with our listeners and clients for another episode of the Viewpoints podcast here on UBS Market Moves, and do look forward to continuing with our conversation in the week ahead.
Thank you, Dan. Have a good weekend and happy Friday for now.
UBS Chief Investment Office's investment views are prepared and published by the Global Wealth Management Business of UBS AG or its affiliate, UBS. This material has no regard to the specific investment objectives, financial situation, or particular needs of any specific recipient and is published for informational purposes only. As a firm providing wealth management services to clients globally, UBS AG and its subsidiaries offer both investment advisory services and brokerage services. Investment advisory services and brokerage services are separate and distinct, differ in material ways, and are governed by different laws and separate arrangements. In the USA, UBS Financial Services, Inc. is a subsidiary of UBS AG and a member of FINRA SIPC. For information, please visit our website at ubs.com/working with us. For a full legal disclaimer applicable to the independent investor investment views produced by UBS, please visit our website at ubs.com/CIO-disclaimer.